There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our roundup of the best bits from the show for Wednesday, the 4th of March. Jumping straight into one of our big stories of the morning, and that is that emergency rate cut by the Fed. It was signalled at the weekend by a statement, an unusual statement from the Fed chairman, Jay Powell, saying that they would do whatever was necessary to shore up the economy and have done so.
They have indeed, yes. Not a quarter point, but a half point rate cut announced around about 6 o'clock last night, our time, the UAE Central Bank immediately following suit. This is the head of the Federal Reserve, Jay Powell, talking about what they did and why they did it.
The spread of the coronavirus has brought new challenges and risks. The virus has afflicted many communities around the world, and our thoughts and prayers go out to those who've been harmed. The outbreak has also disrupted economic activity in many countries and has prompted significant movements in financial markets. The virus and the measures that are being taken to contain it will surely weigh on economic activity, both here and abroad, for some time.
He was at pains, though, to point out that the U.S. economy is in a solid, sound place at the moment.
The fundamentals of the U.S. economy remain strong. The unemployment rate has been near half-century lows for well more than a year. The pace of job gains has been solid, and wages have been rising. These strong labor market conditions have underpinned solid household spending, which has been the key driver of economic growth over the past year.
So what does it mean for us? Aditya Pagalia is the Director of Financial Markets Research here at Emirates NBD.
This is the first intermediate move since the financial crisis. Regarding the timing of the move, it appears that the Fed was caught in a no-man's land, as markets had already priced it in. Hence, it could have been a case of the central bank trying to awe the market with its timing. Beyond the decision, a couple of things stood out from the press conference of the Fed chair, Jerome Powell. One where he said that the decision is preemptive as their outlook for U.S. growth has worsened and aimed at boosting confidence and trying to ease business conditions further. Second, where he mentioned that the Fed is in active talks with other central banks, which suggests to us that we could see similar moves from other central banks later in the week. Most regional central banks, including the UAE Central Bank, followed suit and reduced rates, which in turn should provide a boost to businesses and fillip to consumer sentiment. Further, lower mortgage rates provide additional disposable income for consumers to spend elsewhere.
Well, it means a couple of thousand dirhams extra in Richard Dean's wallet, that's for sure. You've already sat down and done the maths.
Yeah, it looks like if you take a half a percentage point off my interest payments on my mortgage, my home loan, it works out in ballpark terms at about 15,000 dirhams a year.
Well, we know that central banks do these things in order to encourage borrowing, in order to encourage spending if there's less reason to keep your money in the bank, and in order to encourage investment in the markets if that's where you're going to get the greater return. Maybe it means that Richard Dean will also buy me breakfast. We shall wait and see. What did it mean for gold? There's another question for you. And Jeff Rhodes is, of course, the only man to answer it.
The move by the Fed was significant in that it's a 50 basis point cut puts the COVID-19 virus pretty much in the same category as the global financial crisis of 2008 and indeed the Great Depression of the 1930s in the US. The fact that they chose to act really outside their normal procedures, they meet every couple of months, shows that the Fed and the US government believe that this is really very, very serious indeed. And in such a situation, it sends a signal to investors around the world, it's time to move to the safe haven of gold as the proven safe haven asset class over many, many years. Since 1971, gold is up 4,500%. Since 2001, it's up 450%. So it's a proven safe haven asset class. And I think the Fed's signal yesterday was it's time to go back into gold. And for me, it now suggests a price north of
$2,000. $2,000, and not just some fanciful distant, it may happen one day. Jeff put a time limit on that.
He did. June.
That's not far.
We'll be watching that one.
We're putting a red ring around the 1st of June on our calendars, and we'll get Jeff back in the studio. Right, the second big story we're covering today is, of course, the decision to close all schools and universities across the UAE from Sunday. They're going to have their spring break 2 weeks early, which means shut for 1 month in total. We've been speaking to the CEO of one of the biggest schools operators here in the UAE, Taleem. He is Alan Williamson, and what they're going to do, first of all, is roll out distance learning or online learning classes. And we said, how are you going to do this for thousands of students at such short notice?
We were preparing for this for at least 2 weeks. We have schools that are regulated by KHDA and by ADEC in Abu Dhabi. So we were really onto this. And Taleem schools are very well placed for e-learning. And in fact, we will be providing e-learning for KGFS in the UK curriculum students all the way through to year 13. We're obviously most concerned about our examination students who are obviously preparing for their APs in the American curriculum and DP in the IB and obviously GCSE and A-level in our UK curriculum schools. We've got very innovative IT platforms. We have things like Seesaw in primary school, Microsoft Teams in our secondary school. We have high-quality Show My Homework programs that communicate teacher learning objectives, success criteria, and tasks for students, and they get feedback from our teachers online.
So, loads of messages on this, as you can imagine, this morning. If the one word that crops up again and again and again, it's fees. What's going to happen to my fees? Am I going to get a refund for the fees that I've paid if the schools are shut? Let me read one out that is typical, no name on it, but here goes. I am paying school fees for my children to be privately educated, not homeschooled. If the school is unable to provide that service, they should refund the fees on a pro rata basis. We put that to Alan, and this is what he told us.
Taleem, it's a premium schools group. We will absolutely be honouring teacher salaries. And I know from obviously speaking to other CEOs over the last 24 hours that that is the line of all the major companies that I've spoken to in the last 24 hours. In terms of fees, Taleem, as I said, will be providing very, very, very high quality, outstanding home learning for our students. And that would be my argument at the moment to that parent. Obviously, if regulators and government change their mind, Taleem will understand that position and work with parents and regulators.
That is Alan Williamson, the CEO of Taleem.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Looking in more detail at one of our top business stories this morning, and that is that half a percentage rate cut by the US Federal Reserve, echoed here, obviously, by the UAE Central Bank, since we have a peg to the dollar. Richard has already sat down and done the sums on the back of an envelope to figure out what it means for him and his mortgage.
Saving me about 15,000 dirhams a year.
We're going to find out what that could mean for the real estate market. We're very pleased to be joined on the line now by Stuart Rowe, Head of Mortgages at Allsop and Allsop Mortgage Services. Stuart, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So what's your reaction to this morning?
I think it's good in as much that you've got people that have been in the market for a long time. They've come out of their fixed interest rates and they're on a variable. So this will have a big impact on those people in the market. I think it'll take a little bit of time to trickle down for the longer-term fixed products that are being offered. But certainly for people, I mean, for us, we are very much selling to people that are either downsizing or upgrading in the market. So these sorts of people that want to get out of one and get into another, or if their affordability was a little bit tight on moving up to a bigger property, it does mean a much better prospect for those people in the market.
And of course, it comes at a time when we have seen in the last 12 months some rule changes around the fees, the penalties that can be charged for changing your mortgage.
Exactly. So I think there's a lot of things coming in at the moment with regards to switching lenders. If you're into something with a high, I mean, there's a lot of lenders out there where historically the margins were quite high. We're seeing typically now something around 1.5 to 1.75 margins, whereas historically they were like 3.5. So it means a big impact for lenders having to make changes for their existing clients in order to stop them from leaving to go to other places. Because as you know, the maximum they can charge people now is 1% or 10,000, whichever it's less. So it is a big mix up for the market, certainly for the lenders. And I think there'll be much more competition throughout as well.
Is it enough to encourage buying, though? Someone who might be looking at the lower property prices, still sitting on the fence, could it be a tipping point?
I mean, we are very, very busy at the moment. I mean, one of the indications for me, I mean, I've been here 14 years, so one of the indications for me when you see the market coming back or getting better is your activity levels. And the activity levels since last October have been, you know, double what they were at the start of last year. So in terms of the leads, yes, there are people that are sitting on the fence, and I have had the question asked, what about the coronavirus? What about this? What about this? But I think sentiment is still very, very high in terms of buyers, and people definitely want to get on the ladder. And I think if they're looking at their affordability going forward, it may be that they were looking at entry-level stuff, might be considering something slightly higher now, because the cost to get into a mortgage is less, the cost while you're in a mortgage is less, and the cost to get out of a mortgage is less, which are all very, very good signs.
You mentioned, though, a few minutes ago that you're doing a lot of business with people upsizing and downsizing. Is it more existing homeowners than brand new buyers for you guys?
No, there's a blend, but we're having much more of existing than it used to be. I mean, historically, we've not really seen trends in terms of chains, but now we're seeing a lot more chains where there's, you know, two or three people in the chain. One's buying to upsize. You've got one at the start who's buying to get into the market. A lot of it predominantly is new buyers coming in, but there are also people that are looking to upsize as well.
Stuart Rowe, Head of Mortgages at Allsop and Allsop Mortgage Services. Thank you very much for joining us in the Business Breakfast this morning.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
Let's talk tech this morning, because there are a number of big tech stories out there. First off, iPhone settling out of court for its battery-related issues. Do you remember a lot of outrage a wee while ago about iPhone Apple allegedly slowing down older phones with updates in order to sell you shiny new phones? Were claiming.
I remember the story, and Apple has done that thing that companies so often do, is they've said, okay, we'll pay up, but we're not going to admit that we did anything wrong.
Absolutely. Denying any wrongdoing for what is called throttling in the industry.
Oh, my word.
But they are going to pay out up to $500 million. There were 66 class action lawsuits that could have gone ahead in order to presumably spare themselves the pain and further expense. They are going to pay $25 per iPhone with a minimum of $310 million. There's a number of phones that are involved, 6, 6 Plus, 6S, 6S Plus, 7, 7 Plus and the SE. How do you work the logistics of giving a couple of million people $25?
I was thinking this because I've almost certainly had a couple of those phones.
And will have downloaded an upgrade.
At least one. How would I know? How would I have the receipts? And am I going to go to the bother for $25, which is worth having, but it's, what, 90 dirhams, isn't it? Can you imagine the admin and logistics of A, figuring out which phone you had, and B, getting the proof that you had it, and C, the proof that you did download an upgrade? It's very difficult to see.
It's like the whole Jaffa Cake tax issue about a decade ago, which I was mentioning to Kitch from 92 the other morning, because he was trying to break the world record for the amount of Jaffa Cakes eaten in 3 minutes. 90-something, apparently. I don't know if he broke that or not, but I did see two empty containers of Jaffa Cakes as I walked into the studio this morning. And about 10 years ago, there was a big furore in the UK about whether or not a Jaffa Cake was a cake or a biscuit. One was liable for luxury tax. One was not. Comes down to whether or not the crumbs go hard or soft as they go stale. Apparently, the difference between a cake and a biscuit. Don't tell me you've never learned anything from the Business Breakfast. But one of the things that the lawsuit threw up was, well, the people who are actually penalised by an unnecessary tax, if the tax has been unnecessary, are the Jaffa Cake eaters. So how do you go around giving everyone in the UK
15 pence for extra tax that they may have paid on Jaffa Cakes over the last decade. And like you say, how do you prove it? Top kitchen drawer? It's okay. I've kept all the receipts for the last 15 years.
It's just not happening, is it?
No, it's just not happening. But an interesting decision, if only in light of what phone manufacturers, etc. may do going forward when it comes to battery life. Meanwhile, we have from Abu Dhabi, Mubadala, taking part in a $2 billion plus fundraising round. The first, I think, external fundraising round for Waymo. This is the self-driving car technology company. Is it spun off from Alphabet? I think it isn't. I think it's part of Google, but not part of Google now.
Yeah, I mean, many questions about this. Of course, Abu Dhabi investing in it is a big one. But I thought, how does Waymo raise money? Because it is a wholly owned subsidiary of Alphabet or Google, depending on what you want to call it. But yeah, it is the first ever external investment round by Waymo, and it's part of hiving off or siphoning off Waymo. And you've got some really big players in it. Silver Lake, you've got the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board is in there, and Mubadala. And they're not just chipping in, they're leading this. Mubadala is a co-lead with Silver Lake and Andreessen Horowitz as well. So they're right at the teeth of this one, seeing Waymo. This is clearly Waymo becoming a semi-autonomous, if you pardon the pun, part of Google or part of Alphabet.
Do you know the thing that actually surprised me the most about this investment? It wasn't the investment coming from Mubadala, because we know that they're very keen on the tech sector in general. It was the fact that we are still talking about self-driving cars as something little bit Jetsons off in the future, not here yet. And if you listen to Richard Dean, never will be. Waymo One, which is the company's ride-hailing service, self-driving ride-hailing service, is already serving people in Arizona. I think still under a test circumstance, but they're out there. Ditto San Francisco in high-speed mixed-use areas, which I think means with other cars and pedestrians. Do you know what I mean? So they're out there doing this stuff, even if it's still in a test capacity. It's gone off the drawing board and it's very much on the streets.
It is. And I'm looking at the comments from John Krafcik, who's the chief executive of Waymo, on the back of this, saying precisely that. You know, this is actually happening now. This is not just something for the future. It is for the here and now. I was looking at the potential valuation of this deal, and the short answer is we don't know, because they haven't said how much the company is valued at as part of this fundraising. But have you seen the valuation that Morgan Stanley put on Waymo? Never mind Alphabet, Google, on Waymo last year.
Tell me.
Have a guess.
$3 billion.
$105.
Crikey, it's a good thing I'm not in the
$105
industry.
Billion dollars, which would put this fundraising at about only, it's two and a bit billion dollars, but it's only 2% of the organization. Now, who knows? That was then. This is now. We're post WeWork. Valuations perhaps not what they were. But I guess you've seen the Tesla valuation just skyrocket this year, and that's got to have an impact.
People want to be into the next big thing.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast.
Earlier this week, we were discussing the effect of the coronavirus on people's holiday plans, and we got a huge amount of questions about travel insurance. So, you asked it, we will play it. We have an expert in the studio to answer your questions for us. Tony Cherkiai, the head of general insurance at Nexus Insurance Brokers, is in the studio, is in the hot seat to take your questions now. Anthony, it's lovely to see you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much, and good morning to you and to all your listeners.
I'm looking at a Bloomberg story that went up first thing this morning about insurance, lots of different types of insurance, travel insurance, event insurance, reinsurance, health insurance. And the opening line is, don't look for much relief from insurers to cancel, to cushion losses. Tell me, what does travel insurance cover when it comes to things like epidemics, and what doesn't it?
Yes, I will try to be extremely simple in my reply. There's very technical and medical terminology here. So if you look at travel insurance, for example, one of the main aspects and legal aspect of taking a travel insurance, especially for cancellation, it's you taking a insurance against an unforeseen event. So an event you don't know that is happening or not, but you're taking it, the insurance against it. Now, in this case, the insurance world, the reinsurers and the professional in our business, they say that once it was declared that the coronavirus is affecting many countries together, it's what we call a known event. So something that we know is going to happen, and maybe in countries that now at the moment not even been affected, but if they will be affected. In this case, the known event, it's not insurable. It's not a question of insurance. So that's why it's called a foreseeable event, and it will be automatically excluded from your policy. Now, one of the questions that many of your, of everyone, I mean, of the policyholder, they will ask is, I bought insurance before the event. In that case, this should be covered by your insurance company. And you have to read it very carefully, your wordings, read your table of benefits, and then obviously, if you don't understand it, consult with a professional broker.
Is the travel insurance that we buy here from the big guys, generally, do those policies generally include losses caused by epidemics?
This is another interesting question that you put it, because when is pandemia or any other of these, or coronavirus, you'll have to check very much your wording of the policy, because some of the policy will exclude the pandemia, and this must be also declared by the World Health Organization. So you have to be very, very careful about this word pandemia.
So if I just get a bit nervous, I've got a holiday booked for half term and I think, do you know what, I might have a bit of a staycation instead just this once, and I decide to cancel my travel plans, is it likely that my travel insurance will cover that or not?
This is exactly what you'll find out now with especially the ABI, the British Association of Insurers. They will say that this travel insurance is not designed to cover your policy if you decided not to go for any reason. So this inclination of deciding not to go because I'm scared of traveling, or I believe there might be a potential scare in that particular country, could be also, as I said, you're not affecting at all by this coronavirus, this is not covered.
What if part of my trip is cancelled, maybe the flight, for example? We know that a lot of airlines are making changes to their routes, but I've got a hotel booked or a tour booked. What happens then?
Read your policy, check with your travel agency, check with your airline industry expert, and check with that, and then obviously go back to your policy and see effectively if you're covered. Now, there is some important aspect I would like to tell all your listeners. There is one clause in some insurance company that is cancelled by any reason. So this is a special clause. Some very large insurance company have this clause. So check with that. Check with your broker if they can find it for you. And then basically you can cancel for any reason. There are some clauses to apply for this, but effectively it costs about 40% more premium, but it will cover 75% of your paid expenses and you can cancel your policy.
Right. So they're more expensive, but they're more flexible.
They cover more.
Like airline tickets. How common are those kind of policies here in the UAE?
Well, we just bought about 6 weeks ago an annual family travel insurance package. And we did it. We came back from a holiday in India and the Maldives and a suitcase was lost. It was fine. But anyway, we bought it. But we had, and it was basically you could buy economy class or business class travel insurance. And honestly, I'm not sure which one we went for, but one was 2,000 dirhams a year for the family and one was nearly 4,000 dirhams a year for the family. And I'm now struggling to see which one we get. But you kind of pay your money and take your choice. And to be honest, most people, I'm guessing, I think we would tend to go for the bare minimum, thinking, look, so long as I'm covered for the really bad stuff, if someone gets ill or injured on holiday, that's what I need. Now, you can go for the premium cover, but you are going to pay more for it. And most of us, I think, when it comes to insurance, tend to look for the bare minimum. You cover the dread diseases, you cover the absolute worst happening, rather than looking to cover these kind of eventualities. But we do kind of make those choices, inadvertently or not, when we buy this travel insurance, would be my sense, Anthony. What would be your view on that?
That's absolutely correct. But you see, exactly now, if you look at it, the world is changing so fast, and the basic insurances, the basic protection for you, for your family, are taking more and more importance in your life. We remember that we had the flooding, and now we have coronavirus, then there might be some other natural disaster around the corner. If you buy your insurance like you buy your home, like you buy your car, search for insurance that really protect you and your family. And if you don't understand it very well, please use the broker.
We've got people asking whether or not, if they're uninsured and they're already travelling, whether they can buy some.
Again, if you're already travelling, of course you bought a ticket. Most of the people today, especially younger generation, I think everyone buys tickets by credit card. So having a credit card, most probably 90%, you will be insured automatically for a basic cover. So check with your credit card company, your bank, go and check your wording, ask them the wording of your policy, check what is covered, what is not covered. I'm sure that a basic cover for traveling, lost baggages, cancellation will be there.
But what people want to know, obviously, is whether they are covered to change their travel plans in the light of the coronavirus. You said earlier, check the fine print, check the fine print. People are asking, what are you actually looking for in the fine print?
It's very natural to look for the exclusion. The first thing that you look at for insurance policy is the exclusion. You believe it or not, this is what the first thing you look at it. And as a broker, we look at it once we advise our clients. Look at the list of exclusion. Look at the sublimit. Look at what is not covered, because that is the point that you wanted to discuss with your agent, insurance, or your brokers, and see the insurance company, because obviously they will refuse to pay a claim based on the exclusions.
Is there likely to be any effect from the coronavirus on the travel insurance market? Either tightening of policies afterwards or even increase in premiums?
I think that, to be honest with you, we will look at this as an opportunity to give more to the customers. And if an insurer through reinsurance find out that we can cover with the sublimit this type of diseases, I don't think this will be the last time we'll see something like this in the world. So possibly there'll be an insurance coming out with sublimit covering cancellation due to unexpected event like this sort of coronaviruses or contagious diseases. Obviously, there will be a nice added to the to the whole of the customers in the world.
Tony Cherkiai, the Head of General Insurance at Nexus Insurance Brokers, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Breakfast this morning.
Thank you.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.